So, I'm just scanning the little demons that think they have something to say. See which one pops up. The beautiful thing about seeking is that you can do it. And that's just awesome. You can imagine that you're in a condition that's punctuated by insufficiency, remorse, regret, trauma, grandiosity, and any number of accoutrements that helps place you in places you in a certain perspective, and then easily becomes a motivating force for going out into the world empowered with an opposable thumb, a neocortex, and a strong sense of willpower to accumulate knowledge and practices, perspectives, meet interesting people, some of whom you may be lucky enough to sleep with.
And obtain pizza from.
And get pizza. Then repeat. You know, by now, in 2019, we are so, you could say, blessed or victimized to be super saturated through social media, the miracle of the internet, broadcast media to any bozo, including myself, that can speak extemporaneously about anything. And so, in a sense, we have a portfolio of cosmologies, celebrities, exquisite experiences, retreats, practices, correspondence courses, and anything you can imagine, more or less at our fingertips, oftentimes for low cost, perhaps too often for too high a cost. And that's the miracle of seeking. You can seek, and you can have more fun than anybody doing it for as long as you wish. That's just great. If there's a downside to seeking, and that's not up to me really to convince you of, that's up to your life experience to reveal to you, if that's your karmic appointment. If there were a downside to seeking, it turns out to be the seeking. So like everything, it's a curious double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's a thrill ride like no other. On the other hand, the seeking guarantees that you remain convinced of the myriad conditions that are self-imposed, and keeps you in the measurement game of whether the angst and disappointment that you've been feeling and the tools that you cultivate to heal the angst and the disappointment are working for you. And along the way, you can amass a huge library of vivid and superficial information. You can become certified in physical practices, psychiatric practices, holistic practices, yogic practices, contemplative practices, ad nauseum, so that you can maybe make a living by ministering your curious mix of snake oil to those that are in, imagine that they're in need or could benefit from the purchase of that snake oil, which makes the seeking even more fun. Now it's a multi-level marketing experience, a never-ending parade of providers and consumers. I mean, hallelujah. Yeah, absolutely.
Obtain pizza.
And it's one way to obtain pizza, so it can't be all that bad. Maybe, who knows, maybe at some point in the journey, the fruits, the novelty of the seeking, the cultivation, and the amelioration starts to, the returns, what do they call it? In investing, it's diminishing returns. So the thrill that we may have gotten early on as we were amping up on our journey, learning new things and meeting new people and practicing and cultivating and being recognized by our peers as having made spiritual progress, well, it's you end up, if you're lucky, you end up hitting a certain kind of wall. That the novelty and the thrill of the seeking and the cultivating and the practicing is not doing it for you any longer. It's just not providing the same succor, the same sense of wonder, and a different kind of restlessness might ensue. A more foreboding, a more hurtful kind of restlessness might show up that is not easily ameliorated through extroverted activities. That's not easily ameliorated by the cultivation of knowledge. And is not ameliorated through authorities, whether embodied or disembodied, whether ascended or otherwise, giving you guidance, encouragement, information about anything. So you've worn out your welcome, and there's no one and nothing remaining that can entice you. That's when you're really fucked. Because the fundamental angst of being appearing to be separatively existent will not fold, nor will it be ameliorated by spiritual or secular distraction. Now it's just you. You, and you. That's where the rubber meets the road. You could look at the wonder field of spiritual seeking or any kind of entertainment as a form of deferral or distraction, denial even, because you don't really want to have an appointment with you, and you, with no authority, with nothing other than the curious dilemma of your own presence. Knowledge won't help. Devotion won't help. Bhajans won't help. Asanas won't help. Malas, rosaries won't help. So the lucky, truly lucky seeker fails so miserably that you end up right about here, right about now, with nothing to show, nothing to prove, nothing to get. And that is when your, let's just say, the primacy of your consciousness, which has been codependent up till now, has a chance to flower. Before this intimacy was revealed to you, you thought, we thought, I thought there was something to do and somewhere to go, someone to listen to, that there were things to do something about, that I was having experience, and I found that experience to be sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant, sometimes neutral, and that I could fill a certain existential disappointment through extroverted pursuit of novelty, experience, knowledge, authority of some kind. But that folds, that just collapses. And here is that collapse.
When you're hopeless.
Yeah.
No longer in hope.
Yeah. And it's, yes, of course, and it's not really necessary as a guaranteed precursor that you must be miserable and hopeless and suicidal.
Oh, I don't want miserable at all. To
right.
me, that's not miserable.
Thank you for the...
No.
Yeah, right. Yes, I appreciate that. But someone might misunderstand
hope
that.
It's just a line of bullshit that you think you're going to find something.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Like there's something that you can get or know or...
Yeah. The rhythm of being and becoming that suggests geologic time, cosmological time, psychological time, that's its own little hell realm.
Going in the door and keep coming up in the same spot.
Absolutely.
Like,
is. Yeah. Yes. So as long as the predominant, let's say, relationship with whatever presence is from the vantage point of the creature, this separately existing body-mind that you call yourself, then, you know, existential disappointment is your constant companion, whether you're taking note of it or not, whether you have an intimate moment with it or not. It's the driving force. The driving force is more experience, more better, different, achievable, cultivatable experience that will deliver the likes of me being another, me being a short word for experience, right? Me being my experience. So we're on the loop of more experience, better experience, different experience, spiritual experience, ecstatic experience of one kind or another. And we may, for quite some decades, if not quite some lifetimes, fail to see that the looping of being the experiencer on the receiving end of experience is the dilemma. That's the dilemma. Now, I'm not suggesting that the resolution of that dilemma means something as radical, let's say, as suicide. Yeah. Though from time to time that does happen. Someone's just really had enough of whatever their experience appears to be, and good fortune or mysterious bad fortune to take their own lives. But no one in this room is that courageous, so we just have to slug through this shit.
I couldn't even put my dog down.
See? So it keeps us on the hook is the generally unexamined notion of separative experience, and then all of the motives and ameliorative efforts that we make to smooth out the disappointments of being the experiencer of experience. That whatever is present, like right about here and right about now, is too often insufficient. Not enough. It's not right. It's not ideal. I haven't completed one other commitment or appointment to be what I imagine or hope that I should be someday when I have completed all of my appointments and all of my healing rituals and my crystal skulls and my ascended masters and my, you know, asanas and my vipassana.
Plastic surgery and anti-aging.
And
well.
Plastic surgery, anti-aging, and of course a personal meeting with Deepak Chopra.
Yeah. An interview with Oprah.
And, well, it goes without saying. Or I become, you know, a popular New Age author and tour with Asian men and women.
And then run for president.
Exactly. Then I use the Course in Miracles as a lever to become the next president of the United States. Hallelujah. So the parade of surreal demonstration, the parade of surreal anxiety, the parade of surreal mitigations for that anxiety knows no end. I mean, it's a veritable infinity of novelty pouring forth as whatever we might refer to as life. And if it's working for you, you're in luck, because it's an infinity of strange people, places, and things to do and go and get. And so you might be happy and nourished to be distracted, deferred, my value judgment, banal, for the rest of your born life. I mean, really, I'm jealous, to be quite frank.
What about pain?
What about it? Yeah.
But that would be the other thing, trying to escape pain.
Well, sure, but that's what we're talking about. I mean, physical pain, of course, is one aspect, and physical pain, depending on its severity and frequency, can often trump, existential or spiritual or psychological pain, and or can also obviously amplify existential and psychological and spiritual discomfort. And so your first motivation then would be, wisely put, would be to mitigate, you know, physical pain, so you could get back to just your basic existential suffering. Because otherwise it's in the way. You know?
And then you have to create more pain. Because you're like, oh,
well, you're likely to.
Well, now what do I do?
I mean, is the existence of the I predicated on pain or vice versa?
Well, I mean, that's a fun question. And
is that they coterminous with each other?
Yeah.
Like, I suffer because I exist or because the I exists?
Yeah. Far out. I mean, that's lovely. And
are they doing it to me? They're doing it to us?
That's quite lovely and intimate to even consider that question. And there's no way that I would even dare answer it from like an answer man point of view, because that would be demeaning the beauty of even asking the question.
That's right.
I mean, that question unfolds, you know, as a miraculous revelation in your being.
Because if you're trying to get away from the I,
could be.
Then I'm trying to escape the I.
Okay. It gets really interesting, because, I mean, here's whatever presence is. I mean, I don't even know what here means, but Jesus, what the fuck is this? Is kind of what you could call it. You know, I mean, to say here and now and we're all one is like really pleasant, but I think it's more accurate to say, holy fuck, the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't dare do it because it wouldn't be quite politically correct. So you have to come up with, yeah, we are all one and be here now and all of that horseshit. When the fact is, oh my God.
How are you going to run for president without a slogan?
Unless you have a slogan. So in that, the miracle of surprise, which is this right here, is where the curious conundrum of individuation appears to appear, of the I appears to appear, existential angst appears to appear, physicality appears to appear, consciousness appears to appear, experience appears to appear.
I mean, one facet of being seems to be suffering.
Check.
Perhaps another facet would be something else.
Check.
You know.
Of course.
I don't know if you have one without the other.
I don't know. I don't even know if it's necessary to have one without the other. I mean, this, I think, at least in my experience, or in the experience of taking this, you know, going down this rat hole is good too, is we don't see just how full, and I don't mean this pejoratively, full of presumption we end up being, growing up under a certain religion, under a certain culture, under a certain gender, under a certain news media, under a certain political milieu. We don't see that we are flabbergasted to the point of stupidity through secondhand knowledge. So we don't really know what the hell is going on if we're honest with ourselves. And I mean that across the board. So we're absurdly polluted with the ideas of others, whether it's Jesus' ideas or the people who believed in Jesus' ideas about what Jesus believed. And then there's so many of those, you're like, you know, by the time you're 12 years old, you're fucked. Maybe even earlier.
I would think there's so many inputs coming in, you don't have a primary inquiry in the sense that
yes,
one can't even be with just raw existential data because there's so much.
Absolutely. And if you even suggested that beautiful manifold, you know, to, let's say, new parents, just let your children feel what this feels like, not to be polluted by anyone's agenda, that might freak them out. We don't value that in the culture. We don't value not knowing in the culture. We're bred to be unhappy and to consume to get happy. We're bred to be unhappy and consume to attempt to become happy. Bred.
Nurtured along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, our parents, you know, of course, they did the best they could do with us, which sucked. And for the parents in this room, we've done the best we could do for our kids, and that sucked too. You know, and that's still, we're doing the best we can possibly do under the auspices of a very narcissistically damaged cultural milieu.
We can't handle it, so we like make up stories. I had that experience with my nephew the other day. We were talking about death, unfortunately. He's like 7, and I'm like, we don't know what happens when you die. And they were like, well, plug.
Nope, go
to heaven. Don't listen to her.
Yeah, yeah, no. Right. That's right. Yeah, the fact is,
too late.
Uh-huh.
You got through.
So this is a let's say, a legitimate obscuration or obstacle to truly cathartic spiritual alchemy. Truly cathartic spiritual alchemy does not turn to authority. It does not turn to authority, any kind, not ascended or otherwise. It doesn't go to trinkets, accoutrements, necklaces, gemstones, copper, skulls, talismans, candles. It just doesn't. It can't. But that's relatively rare. Relatively rare.
Not even one fun group.
Well, yeah, one fun group is absolutely. You get one fun group. You're a nice person. You get one fun group.
Keep broken. Maybe you'll find one. Holy.
But see, without the turning away from all of the influences of spiritual and secular authority and the marketplace of everyone that wants to be your personal healer, you'll never have an intimate moment to see through the nature of what is consciousness, what is awareness, what is the sense of I. Is suffering by virtue of the I, or is I the I somehow an outgassing of suffering? What is the nature of identity? How did this, you know, curious plasma of nothing at all you know, suggest individuated existence to the likes of you and me? I don't know. The Buddha didn't know either. You know, when you look at certain teachings and you really give them some attention, you can discover all the everything that's misleading about them. That includes Buddhism and Hinduism and the Judeo-Christian and the Islamic and the Syrian and the, right, the whole damn thing. Because you can see that they are all based on hallucinatory impositions that aren't true. Because it might be that the mystery that underlies the curious nature of being, the curious nature of separative existence, and let's just say the possibility of the resolution of separative existence, is acausal. So if your very present experience is acausal, then its maturation is also acausal. And also present, and also demonstrated at present. Both the consternation of being who you think you are is present, and the absolute liberation from the consternation of who you think you are is also present in equal measure. At a minimum, in equal measure. It might be that you're actually more prone to enlightenment than you thought. It depends on how you
that's
respond.
That's actually just one little aspect.
Just
like
one.
Or whatever.
Yes.
But because we identify with this, when we have a face, we see faces in rocks.
Oh, the animus is incredible, right? Yeah. Clouds, rocks, everything.
Yeah, the world according to
yeah.
Yeah. How we identify
yeah.
our beingness as. Of course, we're totally different place.
We don't know,
see it through that.
Maybe this just dreams an animus, and then life
yes.
just looks crazy, and it can dream you as an animus, and then it can dream you dreaming another animus. I mean, it's
what do you mean by animus?
Well,
like something you're angry or upset at?
No, not anger. No, an animated presence. For instance, you're in the woods and you're looking at leaves, trees, rocks,
yeah,
stones,
yeah.
and you're just seeing faces and,
okay.
you know, creatures of all kinds
okay.
that may or may not be there in a, you know, physical way,
right.
but experientially you're like,
okay,
right? You're in a wonder field of
right.
faces and impulses, right?
Right.
It, celebrating you. Yeah, animus.
Celebrating itself. It's,
so,
that's
of
like
course,
all it's doing.
That's maybe all it can do. So we're already... you could say, well, just to be fun, you know, created in God's image, which might not be the old man in the, you know, on a throne, and da 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 da, but created in God's image could suggest this is just a novelty field of pure animus, a causal novelty field of pure enlightened animus, not made of anything. There's no author or authority behind it. It's just the most outrageous thrill ride you could imagine. And here it is. Now, from that point of view, depending on how we might let that in or respond to it, hi. Depending on how we might let that in or respond to it, we could find ourselves, you know, nourished beyond repair. If I'm feeling this from the vantage point of as a creature, conditioned creature, born into a pre-existing universe, separate by virtue of birth, separate by virtue of physicality, separate by virtue of whatever, then, yeah, a certain kind of anxiety might ensue.
Especially if they never trust him.
That's right.
Damn.
But if I find myself, you know, stupefied, by total saturation of non-specific animus, I might just explode with love or joy. Literally explode with it.
Mm-hmm.
what happens, because, you know, when we're experimenting with these kinds of things, the fun part is you can do the experimenting presently. You don't have to, like, listen to some fucking bullshit that I'm saying and think, oh, I'm going to think about that on Tuesday. Just do it now, because where did your ridiculous life bring you? Well, here we are, for better or worse. Everything you've done and not done, decided and not decided, everything that went your way and didn't go your way, for the entire memory of your so-called existence brought you where exactly? Well, here it is. So this is as good a time as any. Perhaps it's the only time one has, to discover what this is. Or discover that it's not anything specific. I don't know what the discovery is. It's not mine to say. I'm just a puppet appearing in your experience. So what the hell do I know? You're the ventriloquist. I'm the dummy.
So it almost seems like we have this impulse to orient.
Absolutely.
And this is the kind of invitation to disorient.
It is, indeed.
You know, to say what would happen if you didn't go down that impulse track.
Yeah.
And you were still, whatever this is,
yeah,
engaged.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Your life, for better or worse, brought you right about here, right about now. Sorry. It wasn't my doing. But this is where you have the most sacred opportunity to sense what this is. To sense it. Not to have an opinion about it. Not to seek authority from anything or anyone else. Not to buy another book. Not to find another metaphor. Just here this is. The alchemy of streaming serendipity is present. The miracle of sensing, which might be the precursor to a sense of a separative I, the miracle of sensing is crazy, man. It's just crazy. Now, if I find myself interjecting or injecting the miracle of sensing with ideas about myself, about life, about secular or spiritual matters. Well, now I'm polluting, in a sense, I'm polluting the mystery of sensing itself with ideas about the sensing, ideas about whatever prior experience might suggest I've had. But you haven't had any prior experience, really. You can't find prior experience, ever. All you can find, if you're looking, is, oh, here, this, now, sensing. Everything else is an idea. Anything that comes to your so-called mind about what you experienced before now is a dream. It is a daydream. Even if you can find the artifacts of that experience in your home, or your closet, or your photo album, even if you find artifacts and you take notice of the artifacts, the noticing of the artifacts is always at present. So all you've got is whatever presence is. And to discover that it's possible that presence is more than enough, and you don't have to drag along the silly notion of who you thought you were before now into presence, well, maybe you can get a few nanoseconds of relief from I. You get a few nanoseconds of relief from I because you just don't know what this is, and that's okay with you. Here it is. doesn't cost a dime. And it's not saying anything about itself, not directing you in any way at all. Your liberation is so good that there's no longer any need for it. It's so good there's no longer any need for it. But that's liberation. Because as long as we think that, oh, you know, things have gone pretty south with me for a while, and I've been meditating diligently and sincerely for quite some time, and I even have a master or two, that's a problem. Because now you're made of pride and loyalty, memory and devotion. Who needs that when there's this?
Well, that idea generator seems to have a life of its own.
Have you noticed?
Maybe that's why people, including myself in the past, sometimes are drawn to relief by occupying that generator.
Yeah.
So we can get some relief.
I think the inventor of FreeCell is right on charge with you.
I've given that up. Answer bag is so much more fun.
Awesome.
I think the presence of I, identity, is a burden.
Mm-hmm.
But navigating in this culture, it seems everything is going to reinforce that I. And it's almost like you have to have an I to even speak the language and navigate. I mean,
maybe. But,
I mean, of course it's a baby. For me, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine someone without an eye. I mean, how do they navigate, you know, on the East Coast?
But, well, look at us. I mean,
how do they go to Philly, dude?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, is that a dumb question?
No, it's quite lovely. I mean,
I like the East Coast part.
You could look at what you might refer to as present experience or prior experience or the complexity of a culture interwoven in the way that it is and say, I navigated this by virtue of being I.
Well, I called Dave today, and he brought me to this room.
I'm with
to
you.
Listen to you and everyone else speak.
Yeah, right. That's one way to look at it.
I present.
And I present.
Here's my I.
Yeah. Right. Right. And concomitant with, you know, that lovely refrain is... Yeah, that's not true. Right? Yeah. So we're just, it's not like I'm just, you know, I don't want to put some kind of hammer down to say, well, you know, it needs to look like this and feel like this and please consider this and don't consider that, because that becomes another militancy.
Well, we can say the I is bullshit, but it's still there. Hey, call me bullshit all you want. I'm still marching around here.
Guess what? The I loves nothing more or less when you call it anything at all.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, he's still interested because I'm bullshit.
Yeah,
I got that fucking guy. Yeah. He can call me bullshit, you know, from morning till night, day to day, and it's like who's in whose pocket?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd rather entertain a question like find the chooser.
Sure.
Find the one that decided to do something.
Yes.
To then have this.
You can't
be the way it is now.
Perfect. You can't find the chooser. Mm-hmm. You might find what we can call an impulse that you might want to take credit for a moment later as I chose. Okay. But if you really, like, look into the strange serendipity, which is this so-called presence, my bias is you won't find the chooser. You'll only find the hubris of imagining that you chose after the fact.
So you find choosing.
Well, it looks like choosing, but again, depending on the thread that you're using to weave the fabric of your imagination. If you're using, you know, spider silk, that's a pretty tenacious fabric, right? But if you're drawing the fabric of your reality, let's say on an etch-a-sketch and turn it upside down, it's gone, man. So this is curious because you can write a story about, I had an impulse, I made a phone call, I got showered, I put on clothes, I had a slice of pizza, which was mezzo mezz, but I still had that slice of pizza, and now we're talking about the nature of realization, and woohoo! I rode in on that horse. But maybe not. See, if I go to memory, I can trace what appears to be a chronologic, right? A kind of a chronological utility. And I get it. And society is built of the magical power to posit, right, chronological utility all the way to extinction, which is just around the corner, thank goodness. But you can also look at, you know, whatever present experience is and not have any conviction at all about what you did or how it went down and whether you chose or not. Because in present experience, it's just the bizarre plasma of, I don't know what this is. And you haven't written the story yet, so there is no story. And without the story, and I'm not saying that anyone should, quote, put down stories, because that's not going to happen so quickly either. Because as, you know, you point out, the story machine is like, you know, even without the pizza, you can starve the story machine, and it's like, la, 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 la.
It's like programming something to recognize 256 colors.
Okay.
Light and dark, sounds, sensations, textures.
Absolutely.
And who knows what and how in so many various ways.
Yeah.
And then once you have that built, what do you do with it?
Yeah, that's another fun way to think about things. So any way that we think about stuff, whether it's I chose or I didn't chose or I did this or I did that or I'm going to my yoga class or I'm going to go see my acupuncturist, it's just a serendipitous, you could say, orientation on top of a plasma that's not saying a damn thing. So this is the oh my God moment. This is it. This is the oh my God moment. This is the moment of, you know, a realization that dwarfs the notion of separative existence. Right here. This is it. Never. It's never elsewhere.
It's kind of like an antidote to the other side of being driven to that seeker that's looking for its sole purpose.
Yeah.
When it becomes a place where, no, this plasma does all kinds of things.
It does.
You can overlay a purpose and meaning.
Yes.
Try maintaining it and sustaining it.
Right.
And
keeping
it stable, then you find
you can,
that it's
you,
much more fluid than we could ever concretize.
Yes.
You know, in the annals of history.
Okay.
Or Akashic records.
Right.
Thus is so.
That's right. In the annals and the anuses of history. Yeah. Well, that's fun because you can find them both. And one does not occur, you know, at the detriment to the other. You can find any number of stories and orienting factors as you care to find in this present plasma of God knows what it is. And you can also find amidst all of the the sense, the flowering of the sense of sense, you can find emptiness. You can find transcendent release from the apparent need to orient to anything. And the eye is gone. It's just gone. You don't negotiate with it. You don't bargain with it. It's just gone. And that discovery is, oh, right here. It's that simple, I think, really. Without accoutrement. So you have to be, let's just say, willing or drawn against your will to be without accoutrement. And both occur. You're drawn and willing.
But you're just so exhausted from the whole thing.
That's another way to go. You're exhausted with yourself and everything else.
All the accoutrements you do.
And you're just so done with it, yeah. So you discover an accoutrement-free, you know, revelation. Without solving anything. Without negotiating anything. Without being given... without being asked by Adyashanti to speak. Or whomever. Not because there is no authority. Present experience is not about anything. So who could possibly know? What could anyone possibly know about it? If it's not about anything, what could anyone possibly know about it that would be of value to you? My suggestion would be not a damn thing. Nobody knows a damn thing about it. And that's the good news. It doesn't stop us from going from one guru to the next in hopes of finding out more about how to heal everything that I think is wrong, more often with you than myself, but I'm next. And you can also not do that. It doesn't really matter whether you do or you don't, because even the moving into relationship, whether an intimate relationship, with a mentoring relationship, with an ascended master, with, you know, your local reconnection healer, I mean, you know, far out, sign up. I mean, sign up, do everything. Do everything. Study Dzogchen in the morning and do Gregorian chant the afternoon. In the evenings, get a reflexology session, smoke a doobie, and hit the sack. Repeat.
Wait a minute, let me write that down.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, wait a second, that sounded good.
But without the hope that it would give you anything or that you're getting anywhere, it's almost like, let's drink all the vodka we want to drink and smoke all the dope we want to smoke, but there's no real effect. Like, you're not going to get drunk and you're not going to get high, but just go ahead. Without the hope that goes with it, and I'm getting there, that goes with it, it is not the same.
And that could either be great news or really bad news. Hard to say. How your liberation, which is exactly this present, affects you, I mean, that's up to you, I guess. We're just saying, hey, this is the liberated moment. It's never not been that. It's always been a serendipitous plasma that never asked you your opinion about anything, but gave you the curious capacity to tell whatever story you wanted to tell. From moment to moment to moment.
You can believe you're doing it all you want.
You can believe you're doing it all you want.
It doesn't matter.
It might not. You know, it's hard to say. To the person to whom it matters, it matters. And to the person that sees, like, I'm not quite sure, well, then it looks like that. Yeah.
I had this experience this past year. I'll be at home ruminating about things that are bothering me.
I am there.
And some of my mind be like, I.
Uh-huh.
I says that. I want this. I'm upset about this. I was angry about this. And I just kind of just go, because it's almost like the I is just like central to the.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
You know, it's just like you don't get past the I.
No, not easily. Or perhaps maybe too easily.
You could convert it to Oive. I've said that too.
If there's something to say, we've all said it.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And not just once. At least twice.
It seems like the level of interest, commitment, and focus on the eye is directly proportional to the amount of suffering.
It can appear that to be like that, sure.
Or it could be, I am on top of the world.
Of course. Yeah.
So it could swing both ways.
Well, let's hope it does. It's a short life. Let's hope it swings both ways.
You gotta try it.
Sooner than later,
right?
Yeah, sure. Right. I mean, you know, some aspects of what we call culture, communication, language, you know, letters. Exist because of the, you know, true, not true, right? The tension field of true, not true. So science looks a certain way. It doesn't look this way. Mathematics looks a certain way. It doesn't look this way. All fields of human endeavor and human documentation, right, look a certain way. They don't quite look like this way. And when, let's just say, new discoveries, whether they're spiritual or scientific or secular or whatever, might push through the resistance field of the way things are, you know, it can create a kind of an interesting shock that, things are, now they're this way, they used to not be this way, but now they're this way too. It, you know, it's very strange.
Yeah, What's the difference between real and true?
Fuck if I know. It's you know, it's your call.
I know. I was just listening to some Peter Brown this week. He said, well, it's real, but it's not true. Okay.
Well, yeah, yeah. That's the problem. That's the problem with listening to Peter Brown.
Yeah.
Fucking guy's a liar. But he has no choice, so, you know, he's off the hook. Yeah. Well, knowing his vernacular in the way that I know it, real suggests that this, that whatever is felt in the way that it's felt, no matter who's doing the feeling, how it's doing the feeling, if you boil off all of your own, let's say, personal narrative, as Charlie points out, you know, the insistent angst of I. You just boil it off for a moment. Here this is. There's no I in sight. That's real. That's the suggestion. That's what's implied by real. Oh, yeah, there's no I in sight. Now, if you say something about it, which we're all doing in the curious and clumsy way that we're doing it, then that is what's untrue. Yeah. Yeah. That this is irrefutable, right, without narration, that's real. If you take the nano step beyond that, now you're in true untrue. Yeah. Right. Paul Lindeblock. Yeah. So this is strange. Because the presence of presence is, fuck me, it's pretty present. But once you have an opinion about it, woof, man. You know, you got a problem. You don't even realize you have one. Because you have an idea about this. Now, this is fun because if you look at the juxtaposition of whatever I might be made of, presence alone does not have a strong I. The 3-second meditation is the most useful tool to discover that. If you do more than 3 seconds, that I will come pouring in really quickly. But if you do the 3-second meditation, in 3 seconds you can't find a goddamn thing.
So just string along 3-second meditation.
Just live your life 3 seconds at a time. And you'll be fine. Or not. It's
maybe
hard to
go
say.
4 so you can like dance a little easier.
Yeah, you want a 4th second in there so you can, you know.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different life if it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. That is like Lawrence Welk.
That's a waltz.
That's a Lawrence Welk life. It's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, really. You get to 4 and all of a sudden you've
1, 2, 3, 4. Now you're, you know, it's a Beatles song. That's right. So the 3-second meditation is useful because in roughly 3 seconds or so, you're just settling in to see what 3 seconds feels like and then it's gone and there's no I. After 3 seconds, your orienting factors, and this is arbitrary, obviously, your orienting factors will kick back in, and then the eye is going to convince you of, you know, everything that it tries to convince you of, and usually does a pretty good job to the point of, you know, madness, medication, and worse. But no one escapes that.
I heard a whole group of horses can never agree because the nays always have it.
The nays always have it.
Sorry, that's my only pun tonight. That's it.
Yeah,
it's right. Got to be at least
one pun.
See it when
you
I
need to be
without
the pun.
Never not be yourself.
But try to.
Yeah, but yeah, for the sake of our comfort, please try.
Seriously.
So the sensing, but prior to I, which is not necessarily a state or a condition, it's just a metaphor. Prior to I is this irrefutability. And in three seconds, doing the 3-second meditation, you're like, wow. Huh. Whoa. No, there's no I affliction. But the I comes creeping in. You know, like poet Carl Sanders? Carl
Sanders?
The eye comes creeps in on little cat feet. Mm. Yeah. Then once you start negotiating with it, oh, it's a hell realm. It's an add water and stir hell realm. I. But okay. Big deal. The seeker's dilemma is that you could say our instinct is freedom from association, freedom from implication, freedom from aspect, freedom from anything being implied.
And yet we flock to, here, let me teach you. Here's
right.
The dogma that we all.
Yes.
We flock to.
Yes, before, on the way to what we might refer to as a little more subtle maturation, we fill ourselves with the thrill ride of I and the artifacts and accoutrements of a life that has an opposable thumb and neocortex and plenty of places to go to become enlightened or whatever we're after. We don't even know what we're after. Usually we're just after, one or other venue to self-promote. Add snacks, of course, yeah. Why do this if there's no snacks? There'd be no point.
Seriously. There's good snacks. I'm like, definitely in. God, it's like.
So presence is, you could say, in the habit. And all of this is, please, it's all grain of salt, because as you really look deeply at it, whatever I might be suggesting is so untrue, it's not even close. but as this kind of an on-ramp, using metaphoric language as an on-ramp, so that as an encouragement that you can douse into your own experience, you can discover for yourself just how untrue you are. Not because I said so, but because it's firsthand.
I was like saying, don't settle for any knowing or any thing being settled or known.
Yeah, that's right.
Just accept the arbitrariness a little.
Immediate new, like brand new. Like, what?
Yeah. Now that's true. See, but that's already true. It's so already true. There's
nothing to say about it.
Right? Yeah. So that's how the I gets created. It's already the case, but then I give myself the sage advice, wonderful advice. I'll meet this freshly. You're like, who asked you?
And that's going to go south real fast. And then you're like, shit, next time.
That's right. I went to a program and my takeaway was meet this freshly. I don't know what program you went to.
And on my way out of the driveway, some asshole.
Yeah, right. Sidelined me and my Brooklyn pizza went flying out the window and everything went to shit.
That's right. If you're reconjuring.
See?
There's an involvement immediately.
Okay.
With moving the blocks around.
I'm not worthy.
I do it all the time.
You're Alice Cooper. I'm Garth.
Schooled out forever.
That's right. Yeah. Now, see, it's an interesting insight to see it with that degree of intimacy. It's no longer self-advice. You're like, this is already free. It's already unencumbered. It's already stranger than I could possibly make it. But if I give myself advice as a so-called sticky note or a reminder or a scribbly on the refrigerator, I'm in time again. I'm in time again. And if you're in time again, guess who your closest companion is?
Cindy.
Well, Cindy and I. Yeah. That's right. So it's quite miraculous or ordinary, depending on how you're feeling, that presence can reveal a concomitancy, a strange concomitancy. On the one hand, it can reveal effortless realization. Because it is already that. On the other hand, it can snooker you into imagining that you should do something with this. Okay, knock yourself out. The habit that, let's say, culture is made of is the myth that you should do something about this to make it feel better. And that's the, kind of the failure that we were referring to earlier on. You come to the failure of needing to do anything about this, because it's not anything to begin with. But as long as you feel strongly inhabited, strongly mishandled, a strong need to be relevant, or exist, or enjoy, or to prove, or to educate, or to heal, you're just a fucking idiot. But that's okay, we're all idiots, so that's cool too.
Well, you could say conformist.
Okay.
Like Emperor's New Clothes.
That's softer.
How dare you admit you don't see anything there.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
You don't see anything.
Absolutely, no.
Right.
Sitting here looking at the years that I did a lot and blah, 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 and I'm like, underneath it all, did I really know I was going nowhere? I look back and I talk about it and I'm like, no, I have no fucking idea. Positive.
That's great. Yeah.
She even had a day planner.
Oh, several yeah.
Several sizes.
That's right. Spiritual day planner. And a peacock was drawn on it. It had Ramana Maharshi quotes. Yeah. See, you can't get through life without a Ramana Maharshi quote. Sensing, not from a necessarily somatic point of view or from an emotional point of view, though those accompany it, sensing is, oh, so. What's so, I don't know. But so is, you know, thin enough. So is good, so is good. You can say I am that I am, but that's way too much. It's unnecessary.
It's a beer touch, though.
That's right. Thanks. The revelation of presence is not hard to come by. You can't miss it. You can embellish it, and that's where you go south. It's with the embellishment. Because the embellishment calls forth the imagination of I, the imagination of agency, the imagination of space and time. Left to its own devices without embellishment, it's just mercurial, it's a mercurial disappearing act.
Just had this image of the mother, as long as she's talking, the baby's quiet as soon as the mother stops talking, the baby's upset and starts to cry.
Yeah.
So the mother keeps talking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe then we'd like to hear ourselves talking.
Could be, yeah.
We'll be occupied in some way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Lullaby. Yeah. The alchemy of, you know, this kind of a yoga is you discover and then just organically you learn how to rest in the sensing of sensing. That's all. You're just resting in the sensing of sensing without accoutrement, without anything to solve or resolve. And that's the curious nourishment of presence. And you hear the lullaby. But in this way, it's a non-narrative lullaby. The lullaby is singing in nuance, texture, in ineffable. But it's not nothing. But there's no narration. It's not isolating. It's intimate. It's available without anticipation. With nothing to prove. Nothing to answer to. Why would you turn to any kind of extroverted or external authority to mess with your buzz? You are the entirety of everything and nothing at all, about which nothing can be known. So there's not much point in seeking advisory services from anyone or anything else. That's a simple statement to make, but it can put the whole New Age industry on its ear. Because so much of the New Age industry is about seeking the counsel and advice of others that purport to know more about this than you do, who don't have the courage to tell you to your face whether they're embodied or disembodied, that they don't. That includes absolutely true of all religion, of all the channelers, the channelees, and with the crystal skulls are included. Though there's no problem at all going to a nice crystal skull circle and getting a buzz on. I mean, like I said, sign up for everything. But if this isn't about anything, about which nothing can or need be known, then it's no longer all that imperative for you to seek counsel or advice from anyone or anything. Because presence has it all. And that could be a relief to some and a blasphemy to others. At a minimum, it's the poor man's way to realization. Because if you don't have a dime to spend, you don't need one. You're in luck. Plus the chicken marsala pizza is not half bad. You know, another way that the eye appears to be so sticky is that we care too much about experience. So if we're having bad experience, we need it to turn into less bad experience. Or even good experience. So as long as we have a reluctance or resistance, and I'm not saying we should or shouldn't have one, as long as one is present, then the reluctance and resistance to whatever experience is I. That's the vulnerability. Reluctance and resistance. Or even, you know, demonstrative celebration or welcoming is also a kind of form of resistance. Because you enjoy being the enjoyer. Or you enjoy being the despiser of not being the enjoyer. Still, you're the enjoyer of whether your experience is palatable or going south. Because you're the unwitting experiencer of experience, and that's the foundation for I. We're just, in a sense, you know, taking a little magic carpet ride and peering into, if not through, the matrix of being the experiencer of experience. Don't even be on the lookout for peace, because it will disappoint you. This is without condition. Presence is without condition. It's acausal. So if you're hoping for a takeaway or a deliverable, whatever that might be, you're going to be disappointed. And whatever the I is, it can't handle that. Oh, hey. Are you kidding? Cooking me up. Absolutely. Yeah. For us to remain, for the seeker to remain dependent upon the nature and quality of experience as the barometer of how well you're doing, spiritually or otherwise, is suffering. That's why that suffering persists, because one keeps relying upon the nature and context of experience. Give me feedback on whether I'm making progress or not. So as long as you're still interested on what the myth of experience has to tell you, you will continue to be disappointed.
How loud is the eye?
Yeah, sure. Yes, right. How loud is the eye equals just how interested are you in this? Yeah, if this is about something, well, your interest is peaked. You just turn the volume up on eye. It's unavoidable. But that doesn't mean that the remedy is to feign disinterest. Right? Because that won't work.
You can't lie
through this. Yeah, that's right. And the impulse of interest is not under your control. So as long as there's interest, there's space, time, and experience, and the eye is your closest companion. But that doesn't mean that you can pull out your codependency volume control and turn down the volume on interest, because it's not under your... It doesn't work that way.
If you're not measuring space and you're not measuring time, and they're irrelevant terms,
yes,
in the immediacy of this.
Yes, and that immediacy, that immediacy could appear or it could be spoken about as freedom from interest. Freedom from the entanglement of interest. Yeah,
that would be like pausing at some intriguing spot.
Yes.
Recording it, talking about it, writing
sure.
a story. Or
yeah, yeah, turning over a rock and writing a new Bible.
Recreating it in some way.
Yes.
On the other hand, it could be, I won't go down that hole.
Okay.
it's a loop. The gerbil just paused and I got the little rock.
That, go for the rock. Yeah. I stopped running and I'm just going kind of back and forth on the wheel.
You know you're on the wheel and you stop and there's that little.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. So the wheel of I, which could include the karmic wheel of reincarnation. Why not? You know, the karmic wheel of reincarnation, you could say, causes the appearance of lifetimes. Whereas the karmic wheel of I is just, you know, here. But they're the same. Interest suggests past, present, and future quite miraculously. And as interest might morph into past, present, and future, the I is born. And those are the same. Now you're kind of instantly whipped into a frenzy of everything that I need to do about everything that I like, dislike, or need to change between now and the day I die, though I'm sure I never will. And who knows if you will, I don't know. Some gurus say, fat. Others, not so much. I don't know anything. We might be a lot more cosmic than we dare imagine. And I'm talking about, like, you know, fuck the Pleiadians.
Yeah, like a lot.
But like a lot more cosmic than we dare imagine. Fuck the Arcturians. They don't know doodly squat Salona. But in order to, let's say, you know, plug your, what were those? Remember the? Of course you do. The movie about the. You know what I'm talking about.
Not a USB cable. We know that.
You know those blue creatures with the unobtainium. The guy that jumped on the little thing that flew around, and they put the things in their thing or their things.
Oh, yeah, Avatar.
Avatar, right? right? They plugged their thing into the thing, and then they had a melding and a merge, and everything was wonderful. Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. You plug your thing into the thing, and here's the thing. So plug your fucking thing into the thing. Yeah, yeah.
Finally, you're making sense.
Yeah, then you go blue. Just plug your thing into the fucking thing, and then you go blue. Chant Om Namah Shivaya. Yeah. And, yeah, you get a sense of it, really. Presence reveals a certain kind of uncanny, truly uncanny strangeness. Free from, any deliberate or lasting representation. Wouldn't that be nice?
Seems that it's always so available and present, and yet we're so freaking busy with so many hundreds of thousands of other things.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right. Well, cake and eat it too. Yes.
I like that 3 second thing, man. That's a doable.
Yeah, 3 seconds is doable.
Make it 5 or 10 and then...
Oh, it's so painful.
When the punster arrives.
Formulating.
Yeah.
Well, that does it. Tomorrow morning, 3 seconds meditation.
That's it.
He's a dedicated
really. Yeah.
That's about how I exercise.
That's awesome when you're dedicating your 3 minutes. You're now taking it to tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You drop your bacon on the floor in 3 seconds.
You get enlightened and a piece of bacon. Who can beat that?
I was going to say
bacon. Bacon's like 10 seconds. You can step on bacon and still eat it. It's bacon. Just wash it off. Come on, it's bacon.
Bacon. Everything slides off, though.
Oh my gosh. So it's ridiculously simple and unfettered to notice the serendipitous way in which you are appearing presently. That's not that difficult an observation. Oh, I'm not doing this. I mean, how difficult is it? I'm not doing this. It's not. But if you're full of, spiritual pride, secular pride, letters, credentials, then you might not notice that you are appearing impersonally, serendipitously, acausally. You might not notice it. Oops. The more you notice it about yourself, a certain kind of quiet intelligence lights up. The quiet intelligence of not knowing anything about anything. Now, one could say there's a certain freedom from pride. Because there's no longer the myth of temporal existence. You pass through the membrane of the myth of temporal existence, and you had no idea you could get that chill.
And still be awake.
Yeah, sure. Still be awake or asleep, high or not high, hungry or not hungry, whatever you got. Yeah. Yeah, you ease into your own presence. And you see firsthand the myth of knowledge. The myth of Genesis. The myth of explanation. You see right through it. You don't seek to attract others' attention for yourself. quite the contrary. You're happy, more than happy to entrain shared attention back to its source, which turns out to be you. And that we can have a conversation like this one, you know, in a kind of casual tribal togetherness. And ride the surf, the crest of your own awareness. Well, I think it's pretty far fucking out. That's just me. Is there a place to go? Sure, if you wish there to be one. This is instantly self-fulfilling. So if there's a place to go, get going. If there's a thing to do, do it twice. If not, okay.
You walk right into that scene.
Pretty cool. The men who stare at goats.
Opens the waterfalls.
When you're not giving any particular attention or concern to whatever awareness is, well, what is it then? If you no longer have your foot on the pedal of, you know, whatever awareness or consciousness might be, it's no longer your concern. And then, in a sense, you could say it's free to reveal itself to itself with greater deftness, because you're not injecting yourself in the mix, insisting on what it or you might be. This is revelatory without being all that revealing. Unadorned presence is, you know, curiously mercurial, somewhat ambiguous. The degree of, let's say, confidence that you bring to it is just another serendipity. You can do anything that it appears that you can do, but you don't need to lean all that heavily on this. Like it's like it's okay just to keep failing. I mean, maybe even that's preferred. Just keep failing. Oh, thank goodness.
some point you realize you don't have to spend so much money to keep failing.
Isn't that nice? You fail and you get to save money.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a double win.
Yeah,
that's
a fly so hard. Yeah. If I step into the father who came and abruptly that left the meeting, along with a little son or something.
Sure.
Hearing that would create a dissonance probably.
It appeared to in him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, I guess I have my ironies too.
I mean, we all have our pinch point, don't we? Sure. You know, you could use the word surrender, but that's not quite like that. There's nothing to surrender. You've never been in possession of anything to surrender, nor have you ever even had sufficient agency to either resist or to consent to surrender. So it's not quite surrender. I mean, isn't it fun just to have a few minutes, not to have to do anything about anything? Just to, you know, put down your cosmic to-do list and all of the ways in which you think you'd be better off, with or without something. Wow, wouldn't that be nice? You just, you know, just put the list down. Put the pen down, put the list down. Here's this. Part of the, you know, this kind of a yoga is discovering just how ridiculously simple and effortless presence is. But also, you could say learning through occasional acquaintance how to be nourished by it. We're so easily conditioned to think that extroverted or extravagant means are necessary to be nourished, when it might be the opposite, that effortlessness is organic. And the nourishment of that pours in unexpectedly.
One of the few things I remember in the Bible, that lilies of the field do not toil.
Mm-hmm.
Yet who can say they could make one of these better?
Yeah. Grapple free to discover even for a moment or two that present experience is grapple free. It's a grapple free zone. You are a grapple free zone. Whoa. You don't have to get really any more fancy than that. Whether there's a self or not a self, or an I or not an I, or a person or not a person, you know, these become somewhat sophomoric. Can be. Yeah. You know, in yogic literature, you know, freedom from I or freedom from self, freedom from this, freedom from that, you know, those sound like envy, perhaps to some enviable destinations. And for maybe the longest time, you know, along the seeking or secular life, you're maybe on the lookout for a few moments here and a few moments there of freedom from self. But sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you. You're going to have an encounter with freedom from self.
Yeah, because if you're putting weight on that being good, you know, desirable, then yeah. Other than that, then becomes an irritant.
That's right. Immediately. That's right. Everything other than what you think is the destination of your life becomes an irritant. Just how much fun are you going to be around?
Be professional.
Oh, yeah. Right. We're all professionals. Kids, don't try this at home.
If I can market irritation, I'm done.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, that was then.
How convenient. There's no one and nothing to obey. There's no one and nothing to convince of, including the imagination of yourself as an authority or someone that needs to be told what to do by you. Yeah, and that's that. That's the night sky sangha experience. I feel like a cigarette.
You can sing "Let There Be Pizza" on Earth.
Let there be pizza on Earth. Thanks to you, Greg, everyone's on their best behavior. Usually by this time in the program, we're talking movies, music, some kind of scatological reference, and sodomy.
That's fine.
But, yeah, you really...
We don't actually do any of those.
Well,
not together.
You're not. Really kept everyone in their best behavior.
Well, it's much more fun to talk about something you don't actually know anything about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's okay. We do movie nights here, and at the end, we're supposed to discuss the movie and how it affects us in our lives, and we end up talking about anything else that's unimportant.
Like, nice.
Like, politics and
history. We would fit right in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody always just loves bringing something else up and begins to escape the conversation.
That's right. it's an art of a kind to, you know, entrain a volunteer gathering, you know, into a certain kind of conversational experience.
Right.
Without splintering into, you know.
Splinters.
Yeah. Yes.
You have to get the pizza first.
My thoughts and feelings on tonight is a whole lot of discussion about nothing that actually matters in the end that made me think a whole lot about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the conversation is really just a distraction. Deliberately, you could say, used, you know, shamanically used as a distraction, much like a lullaby is used, so that underneath what's being spoken is a texture of present experience, which is your own to explore. So in a sense, I'm just kind of holding the lullaby space. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not seen that way oftentimes. It's challenging, you know, but
sure.
No, it's absolutely a long way.
That's what everyone starts to fall asleep.
Thank you all for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for
having
me. Yeah. Happy to share
new experiences, new people.
So you do this once a week, twice a week, how often?
Way too much.
As often as three times a week.